Dave is off on vacation in Hawaii all week long. Asked me to fill in for him once again. Proud to do it. Sit behind the microphone here and have you listening to News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM. Today I'm going to introduce you to Bruce Weber. Bruce is a reporter who's written many stories through the years, but one of them really caught his interest a couple of years ago when he went to a professional umpiring academy to learn what it's like to become a Major League Baseball umpire. He liked the people he met there so much that he decided to do more on their story, and that is how he ended up with his new book, which is called As They See Him, A Fan's Travels in the Land of Umpires. Bruce, welcome to News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM.
Thanks. Nice to be with you, Paul.
Are you, like many people, a fan who has sat in the stands and been frustrated at times and at other times completely ignored these men in blue or black who are out there on the field?
Well, sure. Don't tell my new friends, but I still am. one of the things that people have asked me what I hope they come away from the book with, and what I usually say is that I don't expect them to love umpires, but I expect them to hate them with a bit more information.
I have one question that I think every baseball fan would like to ask an umpire, and I'm sure at some point you did.
Only one?
Well, the one basic question.
Okay.
Why can't you guys agree on a strike zone?
It is a basic question, but there's a 30-page chapter in the book devoted to that. One of the reasons is that it's not just the umpires that can't agree on a strike zone. It's baseball itself. The rule book, the Major League rule book, which hasn't been rewritten, by the way, since 1949, mm-hmm. although it has been revised innumerable times. The definition of the strike zone since 1949 has been rewritten, I think, seven or eight times. I forget which. So baseball itself is not quite sure what a strike is. Which kind of goes to the heart of what the strike zone is supposed to be, and what it really is supposed to be is a negotiation between the offense and the defense. It's supposed to be the thing that keeps the game fair. And it seems to me that umpires in general, not always, do a pretty good job of making sure that the strike zone serves as the sort of fulcrum of a seesaw that keeps the balance between the offense and the defense even and correct, and make sure that neither one of them has an advantage.
That is, if the strike zone is applied regularly the same way, and maybe each umpire has their own strike zone. Do the players and managers know that about the umpires? Okay, you can get this guy a little bit above the letters. You can get this guy a little bit more inside. Do they know that?
Well, of course they do, yes. When you say each umpire has his own strike zone, as though, he's got his own, wardrobe or his own, his own car, it's not like they select their own strike zones. I mean, we are talking really about, the way in which a human being sees a particular area of space. It's not as though the umpires are trying to change the rules of the game for their own edification or amusement. A lot of the way they see the strike zone has to do with where they set up to see the pitch, whether he's a tall guy or a short guy, what kind of equipment he's wearing, does he get down in a very low crouch? All of these things affect the dimensions of the strike zone that fans are generally most in outrage about. But the other thing to be something that fans, I think, don't understand at all is that the umpires in general are calling a strike zone that the players themselves want to have called. I know one of the biggest complaints about umpires is that they won't call a high strike. and that's pretty much true. I mean, the definition of the strike zone, of the high strike, the limit of the high strike in the rule book is odd enough. It's, you know, the rule book defines the top limit of the strike zone as the halfway point between the top of the shoulders and the top of the uniform pants, which, you know, is as bizarre a definition as you can, you know, as I could probably come up with if you're trying to be precise.
Yeah.
But, the, you know, basically that puts the top of the strike zone somewhere in the middle of your torso. But if you start calling strikes there, the players will go nuts. And they in fact, do go nuts. And so the umpire will trade a couple of inches, or maybe even more than a couple of inches, on the top of the strike zone to keep peace in the game. Because although calling balls and strikes is a significant part of what an umpire does, it's not the only part, nor is it the most important part. The most important part is that he runs the game, that he keeps it under control, that he keeps the teams from going at each other's throats, that he keeps them from, keeps everybody from arguing at every little call so that the game can proceed at a regular pace. It seems to me to be worthwhile trading an inch or two off the top of the strike zone for the kind of peace that makes for an orderly game.
Talking with Bruce Weber about his new book, As They See Him, A Fan's Travels in the Land of Umpires. The other thing, as a fan, I'm curious about is whether there's any favoritism towards the stars. Does a Ken Griffey Jr. or an A-Rod get a call more often than not from these umpires? Are they willing to even talk about that?
Yeah, well, you know, when you ask them, of course, they say no. And here's what I would say from getting to know a bunch of these guys. I would say that if there is favoritism, or if you end up, if they end up looking favorably on any pitchers at all, it's not necessarily the stars. It's the guys who, first of all, it's the pitchers for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily the stars, but it's the guys with, who have terrific control in any given game. If you have a pitcher who is hitting the catcher's glove 6 times out of 7 or 9 times out of 10, and you as an umpire know this guy is on that day and he's going to throw the ball exactly where he wants to, you're going to give him a little something.
Mm.
And all umpires will tell you that. I was going to ask you,
since you mentioned the catcher's glove, let me just jump in and ask you right there, how much influence does the catcher have on the calling of balls and strikes?
I think the catcher has a substantial interest on it. You know, not on every call, obviously. But most umpires will tell you that, you know, the way a catcher receives a ball or frames it or gives them a good look at a pitch will, you know, it allows them to look favorably on, you know, on close pitches.
Sure.
You know, one thing I think that fans don't recognize is how damn hard it is to actually see whether or not these pitches go through the strike zone. They're traveling at 95 miles an hour,
mm-hmm.
Or else they're braking like cars moving in traffic without signaling. It's, you know, and I've been behind the plate. As part of the book, I went behind the plate for a spring training game. And I'm telling you, these guys, you can't believe how, you know, how fast these balls are moving and how sharply they break and how differently each breaking ball breaks from another. It's just not that easy.
And so part of it's got to be relying on the catcher to not give you verbal hints, but to give, by his actions, some clue as to what you're supposed to have seen, right?
I think that's, I think reinforcement as opposed to a clue. I mean, there's also a part of, I mean, a part of this is also a kind of a psychological game. I mean, the pitchers are trying to get, the pitchers and the catchers are trying to stretch your zone to the outside. The catcher is trying to persuade you by the way he catches the ball that a pitch that maybe wasn't on the corner actually was. You know, the hitter, by crowding the plate, is trying to hide your vision of what the strike zone looks like. So it's, you know, I don't want to say that the players are out there trying to help the umpire out by any means. All of this, you know, my point is that all of this points to your original question, is why can't you guys agree on a strike zone? It's just not that easy. I know it looks easy because we've got that little yellow box on the television screen that we're all used to looking at now.
Yeah.
On TV when we watch a game. So
right.
It seems like, it's, you know, it's the easiest thing in the world to tell a strike from a ball. But perhaps it's stating the obvious, but when you're standing behind the plate, that little yellow box isn't there. That the strike zone is, you know, is an invisible box of air, and you've got to make sure that it's standing still for you on every pitch.
Do these guys, the umpires, develop relationships with the players and managers? Because I would think friendships with the people you're judging can get in the way of your judgment behind the plate.
Well, I would say that, you know, from what I observed, whatever relationships they have with managers and players are on the field, that there is a, you know, a kind of shared collegiality of the workplace that very rarely extends off the field. I mean, you never... I was... trailing around with one umpire in 2.5 years of research on the book, I was trailing around the field with one big league umpire when we ran into one big league player. And that was completely by accident. So I would say, no, it doesn't happen very much. They of course, there are guys that they like better than they like others, and the players will say the same, that there are umpires that they like better than they like others, but that's pretty much because of the relationship that gets forged on the field itself.
The book is called As They See Him, A Fan's Travels in the Land of Umpires. Bruce Weber got inside that world, and we'll talk more about it in just a moment as the Dave Ross Show continues with Paul Harris filling in on News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM. News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM, Paul Harris, talking with Bruce Weber, who delved into the world of Major League umpires and minor league umpires as well. And writes about him in his book, As They See Him, A Fan's Travels in the Land of Umpires. Bruce, you actually underwent umpire training at the Jim Evans Academy, right?
I did.
Once you were done there, could you get out on the field and really call a game?
Well, sure. I mean, in fact...
I mean, with confidence?
Well, I wasn't very good at it, but... But that wasn't the fault of my education. I'm just not a very adept umpire. But the training that you get in 5 weeks at a professional umpire school is really is quite enough to put you on the field with the tools to umpire pretty much any game that you would come across up to the professional level, I'd say.
How much training as an umpire do you need to take the face-to-face, backwards hat confrontation with a major league umpire? Like, you know, when Lou Piniella was here with the Mariners for years and years and years, he used to like to get right up in their face.
Well, you know, as my instructors used to say in umpire school, it's a lot easier to argue if you were right. So, which is probably true in any given argument, but it's certainly true on the baseball field. I mean, when you really are in trouble as an umpire is when you have made a call that you realize is not correct and that you are going to still have to, stand your ground and try and uphold. And that takes some kishkas.
And I'm curious about that confrontation between manager and umpire.
Mm-hmm.
You've researched this, so you probably know. Have there been instances where the manager was actually able to convince the umpire after shouting at him right nose to nose and kicking dirt on his feet and kicking dirt on home plate,
well, that's
where the umpire actually went, you know what? You were right. He was safe. I said out. He's actually safe.
The answer to that, I think, is pretty unequivocal. I think that's clearly not the way to persuade an umpire to change his mind. And in fact, most of those yelling, screaming fights usually happen after the manager has been thrown out of the game.
Right.
After that, they've got nothing. They've got nothing to lose, so they really let go.
You talked to a lot of these umpires, and you must have talked about some of their missed calls.
Uh-huh.
One of the most famous in history was Don Denkinger in the 1985 World Series between the St. Louis Cardinals and the Kansas City Royals. Has he lived that down to this day?
Well, I'm not sure he's lived it down in the hearts of St. Louis fans. I spent some time with Don talking about just this, and the interesting thing to me was I talked to him more than 20 years after it had happened, and when I asked him to go through the play with me, how did the mistake happen? Because you know, as everybody who has seen the play knows, it really wasn't that close a call. He just blew it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was able to, you know, from memory, 20 years later, take me through that play, you know, moment to moment to moment to moment to moment, where he was, where the ball was, where the fielders were, where the pitcher covering was, what happened when Whitey Herzog came out to yell at him, what was said to him. So 20 years later, he was able to reconstruct this all, absolutely. And then when I went back, you know, and looked at the tape myself, I saw he had it, you know, he had it exactly right. So this has been pretty much burned into his head for 20 years. I mean, he has made his peace with it, I think, personally. But clearly, I mean, you don't remember things that intensely, you know, unless you have reason to.
I hate to keep talking about stories that involve the Kansas City Royals, but I've got to ask you about the George Brett Pine Tar incident,
okay.
Which was, what, 1983?
1983. Yeah, oddly enough, I was at that game.
You were?
Yeah, long before I ever started to write the book, but I was sitting in the left field stands, and we couldn't figure out what the hell was going on.
And so, for our listeners who don't recall the Pine Tar incident, recap it for me briefly.
Okay, it was the ninth inning at Yankee Stadium. I can't remember whether it was a tie game or whether the Yankees were ahead by a run, but the Royals were up in the top of the ninth, and George Brett hit a two-run homer into the upper deck and put the Royals ahead. And Billy Martin came out and claimed that George Brett had used a bat that had too much pine tar on it. It had extended more than 18 inches above the handle of the bat. And they brought the home plate umpire was Tim McClellan, and he asked that the bat be brought out, and he laid it down across home plate, which is 17 inches wide, and he saw that, in fact, there was a lot more of the pine tar on it than was legally allowed, and he not only threw the bat out of play, he disallowed the home run, called Brett out, and declared that the game was over.
Wow.
At which point, one of the most famous film clips in the history of ESPN occurred. When George Brett came steaming out of the dugout, and it looked as though he was, you know, he was going to tear McClellan limb from limb before
right.
He was, before he was held up by some of his teammates. Well, what do you want to know about the incident?
I want to know the umpire's perspective.
Well, the umpire's perspective was that he was umpiring by the book. That was the rule. There was no, you know, there was no rule in the rule book at the time that said you throw the bat out. The only rule was that he was using illegal equipment.
But did the umpire know that rule, or did Billy Martin have to tell him that rule?
Oh, no, the umpire knew the rule. The umpire knew the rule, and in fact, there's a whole backstory to this incident in which Brett actually knew that he wasn't supposed to have that much pine tar on the bat because he had been warned about it 2 weeks previously.
Really?
Yes. Now, what happened, of course, was that the league president ended up stepping in. The Royals protested the game.
Yeah.
And the league president Lee McPhail came in and said, "Well, that might have been the letter of the rule, but it wasn't the spirit of the rule. So we're going to replay it from the time of the home run," which you know, the umpire Tim McClellan, who is one of the most respected in the game to this day, has never forgiven Lee McPhail for.
Mm-hmm. He thought, you know what? If you're going to talk about the spirit of the game, how about backing up your employees here?
Well, that's part of it. The other thing is that the way he explained it to me was, he says, "Yeah, sure. Imagine what I would have told Billy Martin. What I would have said to Billy Martin. I said, 'Yeah, Billy, you're right. That's the letter of the law. But gee whiz, a home run with two outs in the bottom of the ninth. Wasn't that something?'" You can imagine how Billy Martin would have reacted to that.
Bruce Weber's book is As They See Him, A Fan's Travels in the Land of Umpires. When we come back, I've got to ask you about umpires' view of instant replay. This is
okay.
The Dave Ross Show. Paul Harris filling in on News Talk 97.3, Cairo FM. This is the Dave Ross Show on News Talk 97.3, Cairo FM. I'm Paul Harris, proud to be behind the microphone. And continuing my conversation with Bruce Weber, a reporter who got inside the world of umpires, spent the better part of 3 years in the land of umpires, went to an umpiring academy, got to know some of the guys who worked their ways up from the minor leagues to the major leagues, and writes about him in a new book called As They See Him, A Fan's Travels in the Land of Umpires. Bruce, let's talk a little bit about instant replay.
Sure.
It's huge, of course, in the NFL and has been for years. The NBA has started using it at times. What's the umpires feel in Major League Baseball when it comes to instant replay?
Well, first of all, Major League Baseball is now using it on boundary home run calls.
Yep.
And in that particular case, it turns out, and it surprised me when I asked them, but it turns out that they're in favor of it. They like the idea because for years they have been telling baseball that, look, these pole-bending calls around the foul poles, these home run calls, they're killing us because we have to make them from so far away. So they're not unhappy. They are not unhappy about that. They think they are now thinking of instant replay on these home run calls as a tool that's within their arsenal. I think that as far as instant replay on other calls around the bases or calling balls and strikes, I don't think you'll find any umpire who wants to see that. And I'm always surprised when I hear fans who say they want to see it. There is a certain faction of baseball fans that would like to see umpires eliminated from the game altogether, and I just don't understand that, since I think that the relationship between the umpires and the players and the managers and the is really one of the most interesting parts of the game.
I don't think that you necessarily need to eliminate umpires from the game, but in the NFL, it became obvious that those of us who were watching it at home on television, maybe in high def,
mm-hmm.
with the value of instant replay and the high-tech work that television can do technologically to give us that fantastic close-up view of what really happened, isn't getting it right more important than anything else?
I would take issue with that, but these are in fact games, and you want them to run to their conclusion. If you're going to want, if you want to rerun every play over and over and over and over again with the idea that getting it right is the most, is the most important thing, then I think you're going to end up losing the spirit of the game.
But it doesn't have to be every play that gets replayed, okay, Bruce. But there are going to be a lot of close plays, and we all know what they are. And, maybe you do what you do in the NFL, give the managers a couple of opportunities to challenge in the course of a game so it doesn't get out of control. And so when there's a close play on a steal at second base or somebody scores or did the guy actually catch the ball in the outfield, you can go under the hood and take a look and get it right.
Well, listen, all of that may happen. I hope it doesn't. But, I think taking the sort of sincere but fallible integrity of the umpires out of the game is, will steal something from the game. I know there are a lot of people who don't agree with me, but, if you want everything to be determined simply in a natural setting by only the players, then, what do you do when a ground ball is, hits an errant rock and bounces over the shortstop's head? Isn't that unfair? Isn't that whimsical? Then it's not the player's fault. So I just wonder where you end up drawing the line with these kinds of things. And as most players will tell you if an umpire is responsible for the outcome of one game in a season, that's a lot. It's up to the players. If an umpire makes a bad call, it's up to the next guy to hit a three-run homer. That's my attitude.
All right. See, my attitude is I don't think you're the rock getting in the way. That's part of the actual game as it's being played. But the judging of the game and the getting right what actually happens in terms of the results of the game, I was in favor of the instant replay in all sports.
Well, the case, then why have if the rock is part of the natural element of the game, then why have they built indoor stadiums and artificial surfaces?
I hate them. So yeah, I'm going to be on your side in that argument. But when we talk about technology, isn't there something that came into the game a few years ago that I'm sure the umpires hate? I can't remember what the technology is, but it's like an evaluation tool that Major League Baseball uses. What is it?
It's called Questec.
Okay, so tell me about the umpires and their relationship to Questec.
Well, they...
They hate it.
Well, they objected to it right from the start. I mean, for a lot of reasons. It was implemented by Major League Baseball to sort of force the umpires to begin calling a more uniform strike zone. It was presented to them as though it was going to be a tool that was going to help them in their jobs, but in fact, that's not what it does. It just makes them all call strike zones that look more or less alike. Whether it actually does, in fact, do what it's supposed to do, that's another whole argument entirely. But another thing that it does is that it provides Major League Baseball with an additional tool to evaluate the umpires, and they hate that because postseason assignments and All-Star assignments, which are the rewards for their good work during the year, are based at least in part on their Questec scores.
Hmm.
Bruce, the umpires also feel that they're punished, by the way, if they don't. If they don't get good scores. So it's there's a kind of big brother aspect to it that the umpires really object to.
I also have to ask you about umpire safety, because I think it was maybe 5 years ago in Chicago where some whack job drunk came out of the stands and attacked the first base umpire.
Yeah, Laz Diaz. I'm not sure what you can do about that, whether or not, I mean, he just, and I don't even know that that's an umpire issue, since he could just as easily have jumped on the first base coach or the second baseman.
So he wasn't trying to literally kill the umpire?
No, I don't think so. I think, as it turned out, he was just a drunk who had told his girlfriend, I'm going to jump out on the field, but before I do, I'm going to take down the first person I see.
Ah, the power of beer.
Right.
And finally, I've got to ask you this, which I know is a silly question, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Fair enough.
And I know it's a silly question because I see what the shape umpires come in.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a steroid problem in the umpiring ranks?
No.
Not even a question, is it?
Well, yeah, listen, the umpires' substance of choice is alcohol.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm betraying any secrets by saying that.
Yeah, there's a weight problem, but not a steroid problem.
Less of one than there used to be. Back in on opening day 1996, an umpire named John McSherry, who weighed close to 400 pounds, died on the field on opening day.
Yeah,
and that was a wake-up call for a lot of these guys, and for Major League Baseball as well. So, I mean, I think if you actually take a look at who's umpiring games these days, there's not too many of them that are waddling around out there the way there used to be.
I lied. That wasn't going to be my last question. Here's my last question. Why aren't there women umpiring Major League Baseball?
Partly it's because the baseball establishment is, although they would never admit it, by their behavior, they have shown themselves to be opposed to it. Also, the umpires are not really happy whenever women infiltrate their ranks. There have been six women umpires in professional baseball, one of whom, Pam Postuma, made it to the AAA level back in 1989. There are no women in professional baseball umpiring right now. The last of them, Rhea Cortizio, was dismissed from AA after 9 years in the game at the end of 2007. And her story, which is recounted in my book, by the way, is sort of horrifying in the way she was treated by baseball and including the other umpires.
The book is called As They See 'Em, A Fan's Travels in the Land of Umpires. Great work, Bruce. Thanks for joining me today. I appreciate it.
It was my pleasure. Thanks a lot.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Dave Ross Show on News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM.